Let me talk about Kwanzaa here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. LaShawn Barber is going to be our guest. What is Kwanzaa? It is billed on its website as a religiously neutral, cultural, and African-American holiday. Some people think of it in terms of its Christmas associations, but I think that's probably more coincidental. Is it religiously neutral? We're going to be answering that question here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. LaShawn Barber will be our guest, and then Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. We're going to keep him as long as we can keep him live this Monday, the 5th of February. Why? Because we're going to be talking about the new atheists. Are they really anything new? Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, I think, had at least one or two famous debates with Madeleine Murray O'Hare. I think if she were still alive, they might call her a new atheist. Of course, she was an old atheist. So we'll have him respond to the various claims of the new atheists. And then in the third hour of the program, thereabouts, starting about 4:30 or so, audio open lines for your questions, for your comments. With Super Bowl weekend behind us, what I find most interesting is not the Super Bowl itself or even the ads, which were quite amusing, but what churches did in conjunction. You know, they should put it on the liturgical calendar now. I'm just amazed that the new Lutheran hymnal does not have set aside for the first Sunday in February, the great high holy day, Super Bowl Sunday. Because most churches were celebrating the Super Bowl in some form or another. In fact, there was one in Dallas that offered Super Bowl tickets with airfare included as an attendance promotion. There's an AP story we'll play for you there in the last part of the program about a poor Indianapolis church. I feel bad for them because they had planned a Super Bowl party, but due to NFL copyright laws, they couldn't broadcast the game on their Jumbotron. The screen was too big. You might think about that if your church is planning on getting one of those Jumbotrons. Make sure it's under 55 inches. Otherwise, you can't broadcast the Super Bowl on the high holy holiday of Super Bowl Sunday. Can't do it. Hannity and Combs has an interview with the author of a new book called My Year Inside Radical Islam. And then, if we get to it, as time permits, an NPR report on young British Muslims. That's coming up in the last half of Issues Etc. today. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You can email us. Again, we're coming to you live this Monday, the 5th of February. issuesetc@kfuo.org. LaShawn Barber is a freelance writer in Washington, D.C. She's author of the blog LaShawn Barber's Corner, and she's written an article for the latest Christian Research Journal titled Kwanzaa, More Than a Cultural Celebration. LaShawn, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd.
Is Kwanzaa what it says it is, a religiously neutral cultural holiday?
Well, that's how it's being marketed these days to appeal to more Christians, in my opinion. But that wasn't the purpose of it. The man who started it back in 1966, a man named Ron Everett, wrote in one of his books that Kwanzaa is a time of giving reverence to the Creator, capital C. Now, I wonder who or what that Creator is supposed to be if Kwanzaa isn't a religious celebration. So in my opinion, it is. He intended it to be a religious celebration, and he even said himself that it's based on some kind of African religion. It's derived from different pagan African religions. So, but a lot of people don't really know that because it's not marketed that way. But people who do research on the man and what he intended when he created this holiday back in during the Civil Rights Movement will know that it is definitely a religious, a quasi-religious celebration, and it's dangerous for Christians.
What is it? Take it apart for us, its basic elements, Kwanzaa.
Well, it's basically a seven-day celebration that happens just after Christmas. It's December 26th through January 1st, and it's a candle-lighting seven-day ceremony where people, where black people, pay homage to their African ancestors and pour libations and exchange gifts and talk about shared cultural experiences and things like that. And it's based on harmless-sounding principles like collective. I'm actually looking at my article. I was trying to find a list of the principles. I can't recall them at the moment, but they're innocuous sounding cultural principles. A time for black people to get together and celebrate their African ancestors, who we don't know, by the way. And it's supposed to be a commercial alternative to Christmas. In fact, I said in my article that Karanga is, I'm sorry, he changed his name to Malana Karanga. So he's now known as Dr. Malana Karanga. He said that Christmas is too commercial, and that's one thing I agreed with him on, that Christmas has become entirely too commercial. But I wrote the article, I wrote a different version of it 3 years ago, because I was concerned that black Christians were observing this holiday and they didn't really know anything about it. Karanga is hostile to Christianity. He calls it the white man's religion. He calls it spookism. He says all sorts of things. I have different quotes in my article from books that he wrote, so that people interested can read the article and find out exactly what he says and what he thinks about Christ, what he thinks about Christianity in general. And for a black person who calls themselves a Christian and actually observed this ritual, I call it, it's called a cultural celebration, but I call it what it is, a ritual. They need to know the truth about this man and what he intended his ritual to be.
So how many of those who celebrate it, you quote CNN as saying over 20 million people in the United States, Canada, and England, and various other places celebrate or observe Kwanzaa. How many, especially here in America, how many African Americans really understand the roots of Kwanzaa, its founders' ideas, especially those Christian observers?
I don't think many people do. I didn't until back in the day when I wasn't a Christian and, you know, I was just all over the place. I didn't really care. I actually participated in one of the rituals, and I wrote in the article that it was a very spiritual experience. It felt like prayer and worship. But at the time, I, you know, didn't know anything about worshiping Christ. I had never read the Bible. And people, black Christians who observe this ritual, I don't think they truly understand the spiritualized nature of it. I think it's become more surface level, more commercial, just a time to get together and light red, black, and green candles. But people don't realize Ron Karanga's intentions when he created this holiday. And that 20 million people number, I quoted that for the article. That's an official number based on a poll, I think, that CNN did. But I don't think that many people actually understand the background of Kwanzaa. They may answer yes to a poll question. Yes, I have observed Kwanzaa before. That's where I think that 20 million figure came from, but I don't think people understand the roots of it.
Do many of those who observe it understand that this is, in fact, kind of a made in America, even though it was invented by a Marxist, kind of a made in America, African American observance, not something that has genuine cultural, even cultural roots going back to Africa?
I would like to think most people do. I mean, it's very easy to pick apart. It's supposedly based on East African harvest rituals. The word is derived from the so-called Pan-African language of Swahili. Most ancestors of black Americans are from West Africa, and there's no reason to believe that even East Africans would celebrate a harvest ritual, you know, in the middle of winter solstice. So it's not really an accurate cultural observance of anything. It's just something he cobbled together. He's been described as a black militant. He's served time in prison. Even after he created this so-called African-American holiday, he spent time in prison. And it's just something that he wanted to cobble together, and he just came up with all these loopy ideas about about Christianity being Jesus being the white man's God, and it's all a bunch of hocus pocus. I think he was just trying to steer black Christians during that time away from Christianity and towards what I call his religion.
In Karanga's view, what is the role of ancestors and of ancestral spirits in Kwanzaa?
Well, I've read that the elder or priest pours libations to the spirits. I think, in my opinion, it's giving reverence to ancestors, but we know that that's not a good thing to do if you are a Christian. The only one you're supposed to revere is Christ. And Karanga has this amalgamation of rituals and drinking libations to our spiritual ancestors and worshiping, in my opinion, man himself and not God. That's what I think Karanga intended for this ancestral thing to be, just ancestor worship, in other words.
LaShawn Barber is our guest. We're talking about Kwanzaa, coming to you live this Monday, the 5th of February. Our call-in numbers, if you got a question or a comment, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You can also email us right here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. LaShawn is a freelance writer in D.C. She's author of the blog LaShawn Barber's Corner, and she's written an article for the latest Christian Research Journal titled Kwanzaa, More Than a Cultural Celebration. What, if anything, did Karanga, you mentioned a few things, his view of Christianity as a white man's religion. Specifically, what did he think of the central claims of Christianity about Jesus Christ's death and resurrection?
He said that if you realize, I'm quoting that, if you realize how human Jesus was, you'd see he was no God. Christianity is a white religion. It has a white God, and any Negro who believes in it is a sick Negro. He says that Judeo-Christian religions deny and diminish human worth, capacity, potential, and achievement. I am opposed to this white God, a spook who threatens us. He goes on to say some more terrible things. He says, spookism is intense emotional commitment to non-human-centered principles, which place humans at the mercy of invisible and omnipotent forces, and thus deny the right and capacity of humans to shape reality and their future according to their own needs and desires. I mean, that's a man-made, man-centered view of the world, and Christians know that's not how we should be viewing the world. If non-Christians want to observe this, that's a completely different story. But the article in the previous one before this, written 3 years ago, was the target audience was black Christians. I just thought it was very important for them to know what this man thinks of their religion.
Folks, are any of you familiar with Kwanzaa? Give us a call or send us your email. I'd especially like to hear from our African-American listeners. What do you think of Kwanzaa? Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org, and our call-in numbers, 1-800-730-2727 or 505-7850. Latina in University City is on the line. Welcome to Issues Etc.
Hello.
Hi, Latina.
Lanita.
I'm sorry, Lanita. I'm misreading your name.
That's okay.
What's your question or comment, Lanita?
My question is, what kind of response would your guest suggest if you refuse to participate in Kwanzaa and you say that you don't believe that this is a good thing to do? What Bible verses or how can you respond to being the name calling, being called like a white man's nigger?
That's a good question. Thank you, Lanita.
Gosh, that's terrible.
How do you respond when someone says, "Look, this is our holiday," and when you don't celebrate it, you're giving in to the white man's oppression?
You know, it's funny. I've never had someone say that to me, so it's really strange. I don't know how to answer that question, but I would just suggest for any Christian. I quote the verse Ephesians 6:12 about putting on the whole armor of God. It's something that I'm interested in writing an article about the history of, you know, Christian missionaries in Africa and converting black slaves once they came to America. I think that's a very interesting point, even though I think Karanga is totally wrong. I think it's an interesting point that people like Karanga think that. They call Christianity the white man's religion. And, you know, that's where we get into the hairy discussions about race And should race be a factor in worship at all? I mentioned that toward the end of my article.
And I would add, Lenita, if you don't mind, that that if someone is making these accusations against you, you simply say, look, this is kind of a dividing line issue around something like the First Commandment. Does Kwanzaa present a God or gods other than the one true God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit? And how do you deal with the issues upon which Kwanzaa is based, that Jesus is not that God or the revelation of the true God? All right, then it sounds as though, after you've looked at this, if it merely were what it claims to be, an innocuous cultural celebration of Black heritage or African heritage, you wouldn't have any real problem with it.
Oh, no, I wouldn't. I mean, there are all kinds of things that people observe and they do. I just consider, if it didn't have the spiritual element, I would just consider it a hobby or just something that families could get together and do. You know, we're not forbidden from doing cultural-based things, or even I make the argument in my article that we're not even forbidden from celebrating things that are based on race if we're Christians, but it's the spiritualized element of it that's the main problem. And if Black Christians still want to, you know, go through this ritual every December 26th or January 1st, I just wanted some of them to be aware of what the ritual is based on so they can make an educated guess about whether they want to continue doing it or not.
You write about one researcher, Carlotta Morrow, who had, I think, a sister who actually renounced Christianity after involvement in Kwanzaa. Tell us about this.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that. Her site, Carlotta Morrow, is called The Truth About Kwanzaa, and she's done extensive research. In fact, I recommend you interview her for this. She can get more in-depth about the ritual, the history behind it, and Karanga himself. Her sister got caught up in, you know, the Kwanzaa movement back in the 80s, and she had renounced Christ. And since then, she's returned to the faith, but that's what prompted Carlotta to read as much about it as she could, attend some of the Kwanzaa rituals. And a lot of my research is based on hers. If you notice the footnotes here, Carlotta has actually done a whole lot of the legwork. I just sort of use my blog and my political column to raise awareness of how dangerous I think Kwanzaa is. But Carla has done a lot of work, and in fact, she's just started a blog, and she's had some interesting discussions on her blog. People have found her by Googling Kwanzaa. And, I mean, she's just amazing, and her work is amazing. I mean, I never would have known all this had she not taken the time to read all these books and attend the rituals and read all the columns and put up her website. It's amazing, The Truth About Kwanzaa.
So it does highlight the contradiction, the fundamental contradiction between Christianity and the religious spiritual roots of a holiday like Kwanzaa.
Yes, exactly. And I think, as I said in the article, I do understand why Blacks would be drawn to something like this, you know, not knowing the land of our ancestors and not having a real history to draw from. You know, we can't trace back our family tree like other people can. So I understand the draw, but Black Christians just need to be careful. There's nothing wrong with celebrating so-called Black culture, but when you spiritualize it, that's where you have a problem. And I wrote in my article that, you know, those who don't believe in God may fill their God-shaped vacuum in their hearts with spiritualized celebrations like Kwanzaa, but for Christians, the vacuum has already been filled with the bountiful love of a creator. And that's what people need to remember. That's what Christians need to remember when they want to observe things like Kwanzaa or any other spiritualized thing. You know, some people say that yoga and the Eastern religious implications of that are dangerous for Christians. So you just need to make the assessment, but having the information is very important.
So finally then, LaShawn, bottom line, someone comes up to you and says, why don't you observe Kwanzaa? How do you respond?
Well, I would respond by telling them that it's a dangerous, spiritualized celebration, and I don't need to turn to a ritual like Kwanzaa for my self-worth or to celebrate my ancestors. I have Christ. And anything I need by way of cultural celebration, I turn to him. I make sure that whatever I'm doing is biblical and scriptural. That's what I tell them.
LaShawn Barber is a freelance writer in D.C. She's author of the blog LaShawn Barber's Corner, and she's written an article for the latest Christian Research Journal called Kwanzaa, More Than a Cultural Celebration. Her website, LaShawnBarber.com, LaShawnBarber, all one word, .com. Thank you very much for being our guest, LaShawn.
Thanks, Todd.
Well, when we come back from this break, the field marshal will join us, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. We learned last year that he is actually related, blood relation to the real Field Marshal Montgomery. He's going to marshal his troops, which is consists of his considerable experience in combating atheism over his long career as a Christian apologist, and deal with what's being called in the press the new atheism. We're going to be letting him respond to the new atheists themselves, and going to be listening to some audio we'd like your response to. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery will be our guest on the other side of this break. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Then we have audio open lines for your questions and your comments. Since the Super Bowl occupied, for some reason, so much attention in Christian churches on Sunday, we'll hear about two churches. One that brought people in on Sunday offering Super Bowl tickets and airfare, and another that wanted to have a Super Bowl party and couldn't because their big screen in the church was too big and the NFL said, you can't broadcast the Super Bowl. They're greatly disappointed. That's coming up during audio open lines in the last part of Issues Etc. today. Tomorrow on the program, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be our guest. We're going to talk about the unpardonable sin. It plays very nicely into kind of this new atheist angle because we heard last week about the blasphemy challenge and their website, trying to get people to renounce the Holy Spirit on their YouTube videos. Is that all there is to the unpardonable sin? Is that what it's really all about? Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will answer that question tomorrow on the program. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February is a bit of history, significant history. From not too long ago, about three decades ago, there was a so-called battle for the Bible in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. It made national headlines for months running. One of the few cases where a church body turned back abruptly from the brink of the cliff of liberalism. Now, this book, A Seminary in Crisis, is a chronicle, an insider's chronicle, of what happened in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod during its battle for the Bible. You can find out more about this book by going to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or you can call Concordia Publishing House and ask for A Seminary in Crisis, 1-800-325-3040. The number again, 1-800-325-3040. It's the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Democrats say funding of embryonic stem cell research is at the top of their agenda.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Now that they have control of Congress, Democrats plan to make a bill that would force taxpayers to pay for embryonic stem cell research, one of the first pieces of legislation they put forward this year. Newly elected House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says a measure similar to the one President Bush vetoed in 2006 will be voted on during the first 100 hours of the 110th Congress. The good news? Democrats may now have the majority, but they may not have enough new votes to override a veto.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. For more about our work to mobilize and advance pro-life women in politics, visit our website at sba-list.org. That's sba-list.org.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, where values thrive, and online at thrivent.com.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Sean Stevens is 28, and Peter Berdofsky is 27. These two are the, what word should I use? These are the two whatevers who carried out the advertising stunt in Boston for Turner Broadcasting and the Cartoon Network, the stunt that made people think their city was under terrorist attack, the stunt that cost the city almost $1 million, the stunt they laughed about when they were arraigned for disorderly conduct. What word should we use to describe them? 28 and 27 years old. Here on the campus of Concordia Seminary, our first-year class averages 27.1 years old. I do know many words to describe these young men. Dedicated comes immediately to mind. Walk around Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., and you see thousands of people of that age who work in government. The words public servants come to mind. Think of the tens of thousands of young adults serving and dying in Iraq and Afghanistan. Oh, there are words for Sean Stevens and Peter Berdofsky. Let's hope some words penetrate their hearts and turn them into contributing members of society. These comparisons remind us that, by and large, our young people are great. They are gifts of God whom we should encourage in all that is good and right. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, online at thrivent.com. We do more than work. We work with a purpose.
The secrets of the Dead Sea Scrolls will come to life for you on the AM 850 KFUO Thrivent Financial for Lutherans tour to Kansas City's Union Station for this monumental exhibition the weekend of March 3rd and 4th.
Together we'll see 10 of the scrolls. The documents date back before biblical times and include some of the earliest surviving texts that formed the books of the Old Testament. The Dead Sea Scrolls exhibit features many artifacts discovered at the ancient settlement of Qumran near the Dead Sea.
This all-inclusive tour includes round-trip deluxe Mid-American motor coach transportation, luggage handling, one-night lodging at the Comfort Inn and Suites, admission to the Dead Sea Scrolls exhibit at Union Station, and an authentic Kansas City-style barbecue dinner at Arthur Bryant's restaurant.
Call now, 505-7800 or 1-800-844-0524.
Contact us now and reserve your ticket for the AM 850 KFUO Thrivent Financial for Lutherans tour to see the Dead Sea Scrolls, March 3rd and 4th.
There's not a person alive who is certain that Jesus was born of a virgin and is coming back who really has good reasons for that certainty.
That's Sam Harris. He's author of the books Letter to a Christian Nation. You've been hearing a lot about that lately. He also wrote a book called The End of Faith. Sam Harris is one of what they're calling the new atheists. Now, I don't know how new they are. We're gonna try and sort that out at the very beginning of our conversation with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery here in just a moment. We're going to be talking about the new atheists, their claims. Much of the coverage that we've been hearing in the news about the new atheists has to do with their tactics, with their plan for... They really have two big problems. They got a problem with religion in general. They got a real problem with Christianity in particular. And they have a problem with religious tolerance. Now, this might be a new wrinkle for the new atheists. They have a problem with religious moderates who want to kind of have their cake and eat it too. Oddly enough, some of the things that the new atheists are observing about religious liberalism are actually true. One of the things Sam Harris says is that you cannot honestly read the Christian scriptures and come away a religious Christian liberal. Now, he says that by way of criticism of the Christian scriptures. He says they're filled with all sorts of nasty things, and if you're consistent with them, you will be as religiously oppressive and dangerous as the most radical Muslim. Another claim of the new atheist. Is it a new claim? We ask for your participation. We're coming to you live this Monday. It's the 5th of February. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery will be our guest, 505-7850. Or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. issuesetc@kfuo.org. We're going to keep Dr. Montgomery as long as we can, responding to audio from the New Atheists, and then we'll have audio open lines for your questions and your comments. We'll talk a little bit about Super Bowl Sunday. There was a Dallas church offering Super Bowl tickets as an attendance promotion. Not only the tickets, but also airfare. Somebody won. And they said, look, this is really what you got to do when the church is all about marketing. And then there was a church in Indianapolis. Think about it. Their Colts are playing in the Super Bowl. What they wanted to do was play the Super Bowl during their Super Bowl party, and their big screen in their big screen sanctuary was too big, and it ran afoul of NFL copyright laws, rebroadcast, and that kind of stuff. We'll talk about that during audio open lines coming up in about an hour here on Issues, Etc. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery joins us. He's Professor Emeritus at the University of Luton in England. He's a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's a distinguished professor of apologetics and the history of Christian thought at Trinity College and Theological Seminary in Newburgh, Indiana. He has authored and edited more than 50 books, including How Do We Know There Is a God? Dr. Montgomery, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
A great pleasure as always.
You've had a chance to listen to some of the media on the New Atheists. Is there anything new about the New Atheists?
Well, only their approach. They're now taking the view that they need to oppose the moderate, tolerant attitude that prevails apparently in American religion, where you just don't come down hard on any question. So what they're really doing now is opposing political correctness. What they want is to be able to criticize religion head on. They want to oppose the delusions that religion creates, and they want to get rid of a kind of attitude of benign tolerance in which one cannot really face the issues of God's existence and the implications of religious belief.
I'm wondering if you're feeling any nostalgia. You have past experience with the late Madeline Murray O'Hare. Tell us about that experience.
Well, she was hardly a politically correct person. I mean, she would have fitted perfectly with Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins in the sense that she was absolutely obnoxious. I mean, she was so obnoxious, in fact, that she was a wonderful argument for theism, for belief in God. After you had a very small amount of contact with Mrs. O'Hare, you came to the conclusion that if that's what atheism represented, you didn't want it. So she was really a good advertisement for Christian faith. And in a way, these characters, Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins, fall into that same category. If you listen to them, you begin to ask yourself, surely there's got to be a world view more attractive than this. There's got to be something more to the universe than what these people are saying. And, you know, that follows from the biblical position that the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. The argument that there isn't any God is literally foolishness. And so no matter how they put it, whether they put it in terms of a polite political correctness or whether they put it in terms of condemning the religionist for having created all the problems of human society, in either case, the position is so bad that it drives people in the opposite direction.
One more question on Madeline Murray O'Hare. In your debates with her, could you sum up what the status controversiae was between the two of you?
Well, yes, we dealt with the question of Jesus, and this came about because a youth evangelist had done very poorly in a dialogue with Mrs. O'Hare on Chicago radio. This was Jack Wurtzen, a youth evangelist, a very fine person, but he really didn't know one end from up. For example, Mrs. O'Hare mentioned Josephus, and Jack Wurtzen never heard of Josephus. well, anyway, the result of this was that I was brought in because people panicked. They felt that, the kingdom of God was going down the drain and something had to be done with Mrs. O'Hare. So we dealt with the issue of Jesus. And, of course, all the evidence is on the side not only of Jesus existing, but of his miracles, his resurrection from the dead, his validated claim to deity, and so I went after Mrs. O'Hare hammer and tongs. And she was not able to deal with this, because this, you see, is not a question of emotional faith. It's a question of a fact. And that's where these new atheists are typically completely off base. They say that belief in God is just a matter of a personal experience, a kind of emotionality, and it isn't. It's an issue as to whether God has in fact revealed himself in Jesus Christ.
Well, you mentioned before Richard Dawkins. He's kind of the older voice from the new atheist. Let's hear what he has to say about the God of the Old Testament as he perceives him.
The God of the Old Testament is arguably the most unpleasant character in all fiction. A petty, unjust, unforgiving control freak, a vindictive, bloodthirsty ethnic cleanser, a misogynistic, homophobic, racist, malevolent bully.
Well, Dr. Montgomery, what do you make of Dawkins' reading of the Old Testament and the God therein?
Well, of course, this is typical Dawkins. It is utterly selective. It is also placing his moral values over against the Old Testament. And as an atheist, he has no basis for moral values anyway. So this is a worthless piece of criticism. The God of the Old Testament happens to be a God of incredible love who took the Jewish people, a fairly obnoxious group, incidentally, and saved them from slavery in Egypt, brought them out of Egypt with his high hand and his love, and preserved them through the centuries in spite of their violating his will, and ultimately used them as the vehicle to save the human race through the coming of Jesus Christ. Anyone who can't see the extent of the love of the God of the Old Testament for the human race is utterly blind. By the way, if you give me an opportunity, I will make a few points about Dawkins and his denial of intelligent design.
Please do, if you would, since we're kind of at that point in the conversation. What are those points, Dr. Montgomery?
Yes, well, in Dawkins' book, The Blind Watchmaker, Dawkins argues that really there is apparent evidence for design, but this is not realistic at all. And what one needs to do is to recognize that this is an atheistic universe in spite of the fact that it has some evidences, apparent evidences of intelligent design. The unfortunate part about Dawkins' argument is that it ignores all of the solid evidence that exists for intelligent design. Dawkins developed a biomorph computer program in which 9 genes were employed, numbers 1 through 9, a mutation consisting of adding and subtracting 1 from a single gene. The procedure was to run a number of times, producing litters of mutant offspring. After a few dozen generations, you get an amazing variety of shapes, and these look like they might be the result of intelligence, right? You get what looks like a bee flower or a lamp or a jumping spider or something of that kind. But the fact of the matter is that this can only come about as a result of the design that is introduced into the program.
The original genes.
Well, exactly. A commentator on this, who is not a Christian at all, a gal by the name of Ellen Throw, in her book Artificial Life Explorers Kit in 1993, said, "The system is designed to require outside intervention. Originally Dawkins, in the 2 main characteristics of natural systems, evolution and self-reproduction." So you've got to have intelligence in order to design this particular biomorph approach. Well, Dawkins is trying to use this to argue that there isn't any design in the universe. Great Scott! I mean, this is utterly irrational.
If Dawkins were to be consistent, he would leave his laboratory hoping that the experiment would design itself, given enough time, wouldn't he?
Well, surely, surely. And, you know, that carries us back, of course, to the to Huxley's notion of monkeys typing at random long enough to produce literature, the works of Shakespeare, right? And in my Tractatus Logico Theologicus, I cited a recent repeat of Huxley's experiment at Plymouth University, England. What they did was to put monkeys in with computers to see what the result would be. The monkeys, first of all, attacked the computer, second, urinated on it, and finally failed to produce a single word. The fact of the matter is that apart from intelligent design, you can't possibly get the world in which we find ourselves. And that's why the fool says in his heart, there is no God.
Well, here's another elder voice of the new atheist, Paul Boyer. He's a biochemistry professor from UCLA. His view on the relationship of science and faith.
I find no evidence from the methods of science for the existence of God. And if there is no evidence for the existence of things, then I, as a scientist, conclude that it does not exist.
Your response, Dr. Montgomery?
Well, you know, Harvey Cox, one of the Death of God theologians that I dealt with back in the 1960s, Harvey Cox says, the trouble with that argument is that God is not subject to any kind of evidence or investigation. Well, if Cox were right, then, of course, so would the atheist be right, because we're not going to believe in something for which there isn't any evidence whatsoever. We might as well believe in fairies or whatever. The fact of the matter is that the scientist you quote has simply never seriously checked out the case for God's existence. If he had done so, he would start with the claims of Jesus Christ, the historical evidence for the resurrection, and Jesus' claims on the basis of this. He would also, of course, have worked through the implications of the second law of thermodynamics. Second law of thermodynamics says that in any closed system, the energy, the available energy, is going to decline to heat death. The energy is still there, but it can't accomplish anything. Now, if the atheist were right and the universe had been around forever, then, of course, in a finite period of time, we would have reached heat death. We wouldn't even have the energy left to discuss this question. So it's clear that the universe is not infinite, that it's been brought about in a temporal time, and it hasn't yet had enough time to reach heat death. That means there's got to be a creation. You can't have an infinite universe as long as the second law of thermodynamics still operates.
We're talking with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery about the new atheists. Our call-in number, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, coming to you this Monday, the 5th of February. Our in-studio email address, issues@kfuo.org. Well, one of the leading spokespersons for the new atheist movement is Sam Harris. He's authored two books, Letters to a Christian Nation and End of Faith. This is what he has to say about morality and religion.
If religion were really the only durable foundation for morality, you would expect atheists to be really badly behaved. You would go to a group like the National Academy of Sciences, and these are our most elite scientists, 93% of whom reject the idea of God. You would expect these guys to be raping and killing and lying and stealing with abandon.
Dr. Montgomery, how do you respond to his argument?
Well, the reason that they aren't raping, et cetera, is simply that they're living off of inherited capital. They have picked up the ethics of the historic Christian tradition. They're living in a context which has been given to them by biblical Christianity and of course, the laws of the land, which derive as well from the Christian tradition. The laws of the land keep them from carrying out activities like this. What Harris ought to consider is that the atheistic regimes of the 20th century manage to kill and maim and violate human rights in the case of more people than have lived in all of the centuries preceding. It's that bad. For example, it's been conservatively estimated that at least 180 million people were killed by the secular governments of the 20th century. Stalin was responsible for killing over 40 million people. He closed down 48,000 churches and attempted the liquidation of the entire Christian church. Mao Zedong got rid of at least 72 million people. And we're not even talking about Pol Pot or Hitler, for goodness sake. All of these were atheistic leaders who did not believe in any kind of ultimate morality or last judgment. These are the people that are really dangerous. And Harris, of course, ignores all of that. I mean, you look at this kind of thing, and anything negative that was produced by the Roman Catholic Inquisition of the 15th and 16th century looks trivial.
Well, in an interview that Harris did, he actually was asked the question about atheistic political regimes, and here was his response.
Communism was certainly an example, and so was Nazism and fascism generally. These are examples of rigid ideologies that were dogmatic through and through. This is not reason run amok. This is not people demanding too much evidence for their core beliefs. These were essentially political religions. And when you look at what the Nazis believed, I mean, these were, frankly, many of these people in positions of power were quite deranged. Himmler thought that the Aryans had descended since the beginning of time and had been preserved in ice, and he created a meteorological division of the Reich to test this ice theory. I mean, these were not the kings of reason. And so I'm not arguing that we create gulags for people who believe in Jesus or in Islam. I'm saying that we simply need to throw off this taboo that keeps us from calling a spade a spade.
All right, Dr. Montgomery, he says that communism and fascism were political religions, and besides, they were all crazy, too. How do you respond?
Well, when he talks about this, he ignores the fact that there is a gigantic difference among religions. There are the political religions. There are also a religion such as Islam that advocate jihad, and there is the Christian faith. You can't lump all of this stuff together. If you analyze them, you know, by their fruits you shall know them, if you analyze them, you find that these political religions created hideous results. And these were political religions based in atheism, exactly the position that Harris himself maintains. And if you move over to theistic religions, we're not arguing that anything theistic is good. What about, for example, the Aztecs, who engaged in human sacrifice in order to satisfy their deities? We're not arguing that anything theistic is good. What we're saying is that if you look at the evidence for any and all religions, you're going to find that Christianity is in a qualitatively different position. It's in a position where there is solid evidence for the truth of its claims, for Jesus being God Almighty, come to earth to die for the sins of the world. This is a religion based upon the central principle of love, because we weren't able to accomplish our own salvation, and he did this for us, even though we were in a position of opposition to him. That's where the evidence lies. And the problem with people like Harris is that they paint over all of this. They obscure the differences among religious claims, and they try to throw them all into the same pot. And they are not that sort of thing at all. And, of course, in the case of Harris, they don't recognize that the religions that are based upon their own views, namely atheism, have created absolutely hideous results throughout history, and especially in modern times.
I'm Todd Wilkin. You're listening to Issues Etc. We're coming to you live this Monday, the 5th of February. Now, if you have a question or a comment on the new atheists, feel free to give us a call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or send us your email, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Our guest is Christian apologist, law professor, and international human rights attorney, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. Well, I wonder if this is what Sam Harris is up to, again, failing to make the distinction between one religion and another in this soundbite.
If you think the creator of the universe is letting people fly planes into our buildings because we are tolerating gay marriage, or he's whipping up hurricanes in the Gulf because we're tolerating gay marriage, you have to try to legislate against gay marriage. And if you think the creator of the universe is going to be scandalized by the mere depiction of Muhammad, you have to take to the streets and start rioting. There's nothing intolerant or mean or fundamentalist or dogmatic about opposing this kind of delusion.
Your response, Dr. Montgomery? We've got about a minute before our break.
Well, it's typical of Harris to take these stereotypes and to use them against religious positions. He doesn't face the case for Jesus Christ. The issue is not gay marriage stem cell cloning. The issue is simply whether or not there is sufficient evidence that God has revealed himself in Jesus Christ. If he has, there are going to be implications of this, but that is the way in which you got to deal with the question.
He seems to be contrasting, or actually equating, an extreme form of one religion with what one may argue is an extreme form of another religion. Is that good comparative religion?
Well, of course not. And he doesn't know what he's doing in that area at all. All he's doing is picking ghastly examples from a variety of sources. And in any case, you've got to distinguish among these religious claims and then deal with each one individually as a truth question.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. He's Professor Emeritus at the University of Luton in England, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's Distinguished Professor of Apologetics and the History of Christian Thought at Trinity College and Theological Seminary in Newburgh, Indiana. He's author and editor of more than 50 books, including his book. What is the name of the book again, Jeff? I'm sorry. It is Dr. Montgomery, your book on how do you know that there is a God?
Popular book entitled How Do We Know There Is a God and Other Questions That Are Not Generally Faced in Polite Society. That's a fun book, and it's available from the Canadian Institute on Law, Theology, and Public Policy.
Their website is CILTPP.com. That's the website for the Canadian Institute for Law, Theology, and Public Policy, CILTPP.com. The book is called How Do We Know That There Is a God? You can also call them, area code 403-720-8714, area code 403-720-8714. When we come back from this break, we've got some more audio from the New Atheists. Next up, Ellen Johnson of the American Atheists. I think she's Madeleine Murray O'Hare's successor. And she responds to a very common argument that's made. It's kind of a man-on-the-street argument about atheism. You hear it all the time. There are no atheists in foxholes. We'll see what an atheist thinks about that very common phrase and whether or not it's actually true that there are no atheists in foxholes. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is responding with us to the claims of the new atheists. When we come back, we'll have 25 more minutes with him. Stay tuned.
It's not about you. It's about Jesus for you. You're listening to Issues, Etc.